Star Trek 57, M23, take two.
It's the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
I thought the holodeck had safety protocols.
Perhaps they are malfunctioning.
We should get out of here, not risk anything else. Computer, end program. Mr. Scott, please end program.
Computer, Arch.
So, we can't shut it off. The program could actually hurt us. And we can't get out.
Indeed.
Everybody got that?
Okay. Push play.
Cream cheese robot. Cream in the butt.
Okay.
Cream cheese robot. Give it a shot. Cream cheese robot. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
All right.
I'm a robot.
That's a good gag, Dan. Good gag, Dan.
Cream cheese robot.
To the audience. The bot. To the audience at home.
Cream cheese robot. Dan has, give it a shot.
Dan has been doing this for quite the little while.
Well, it's about 5 minutes.
Who, me?
And he had promised that he had concluded his...
I didn't promise.
His cream cheese bonus.
I said I would, but I didn't promise.
Well, okay.
That only makes me a partial liar.
Technically, he didn't promise, but he did say... When I said, are you for real ready to
yeah.
start the podcast? Dan said, yeah, man.
Yeah, of course. I did say that.
Though he was like, are you ready? Are you ready?
But,
are you ready?
But is it better because I didn't promise? Because I'm not breaking a promise, but I'm still lying.
Well, maybe it's a topic for another podcast to sort of break apart
and analyze
your particular morality.
When you break it apart, it stinks. When you break it, it's in the toilet and you break it apart, it stinks. Never mind.
I meant more metaphorically, sort of.
There
pull back layer by layer, examine the philosophy,
like an
your
onion.
Moral philosophy.
Like an onion.
Yeah, like an onion. Or as they would say in Louisiana.
Onion.
An onion.
Onion.
You ever seen, there's a guy who does...
Adam Sandler.
No, but there's a Louisiana fella who is a chef who shows how to cook stuff, and he does everything in one of those big cauldrons where he just keeps putting a bunch of shit in there.
Oh, that guy. Yeah. Doesn't he wear overalls or something?
Are you talking about from back in the day?
No, he's a contemporary fella. He's got a broken oar that he uses as a food paddle.
Yeah, I know what you're talking
about. To stir
like
the gumbo.
Yeah, that's
good.
Old school,
and the main thing is like throughout like the recipe is like, you know what you do now? You add some more onion.
Gotta add
onion.
Yeah, it looks pretty good.
I think they don't have too many things to add to it.
So yeah.
Limited palette of ingredients in Louisiana.
Okay, so hello.
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 It's time to do this thing for real and be serious. No more joking around. We're going to stay on schedule. We're not going to stray one bit. We're going to be professionals.
Okay. This is
really?
This is...
Okay.
What are we doing?
You're welcome.
This is the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
Yeah. Computer.
We'd like to welcome you to
run
that podcast.
Program.
Yeah. What's the program? Sorry.
This time he did.
This time was on me.
It's okay. I've stopped.
I walked on the audio.
I've stopped caring. I've decided that it's not worth.
Oh, now you stop caring.
I know, Jesse. I'm sorry. The timing is terrible.
Very zen.
to be honest, I stopped caring last week, but I didn't let anyone know. I held back.
You might have told us no.
I mean, you might have told us.
Well,
a couple weeks ago, maybe.
Last episode. Last episode, however long ago, because time's been going together.
Time has been going together.
But like, it's something I was trying out. Whether I mentioned or not, I don't remember. I just know it was something I was trying out, and I decided I liked it. It's less stressful. on me, and it's not so demanding on you guys. I don't want to create this rule that you guys have to follow. That's not fair of me to do.
Well,
you know, that's not fair of me to put that shit on you. That's my shit. I shouldn't put my shit on you. You know what I'm saying?
You already got
your shit. You don't need my shit.
I do have some shit.
Yeah, you don't need my shit. So do whatever, man. I'm like a big flappy butt cheek.
All right. Big flappy butt.
Welcome to the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
Computer. Run program.
Monster.
And it's so long. It's such a long clip.
You're welcome.
It is episode 301.
Get out.
Of the...
What?
Yes.
Wait.
Wait, what happened to 299?
No, we did... 299 was last week.
Wait.
Okay, don't worry.
We've done more than 300
episodes. I lost count of
everything. We've done 300 episodes so far.
We've done 300
episodes. And this is the first one after that. This is a momentous occasion.
I mean, it's just the next episode.
A momentous.
Okay.
But it's 301.
Is this one of those things where you need the light that says, is there a joke coming up? Are you setting up a joke?
This is the new century...
What kind of century is it, Dan?
This marks the newest century of podcasts.
Yes. I do subscribe to that mathematical
tradition. It's not 300. It's 301.
I'm picking up what you're putting down.
See?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. So, yes, thank you. Hello. And welcome to the 301st episode
of the show.
of this podcast.
Yes.
Which, as you can tell, we've got, we're real good at it now.
We're really getting good at it.
Real
this.
smooth openings, no dilly dallying. Everything's on topic.
Real smooth.
This is where you go just to get the latest insights.
It tells no lies.
What would you do?
into your favorite franchise, Star Trek. All right. So, okay, let's do the next little bit. Jesse, we're going to pay attention here because remember, this is part of the deal.
No, remember, I just said.
No. This has nothing to do with you, Dan.
Everything has to do with me.
No, we're just trying to, like, I'm going to say the name of the episode. That's what's going to happen.
Don't lecture me on jurisdiction, Lieutenant.
And then when.
Diction.
When I say the name of the episode, there's a strong possibility that Dan has selected a sound clip that he intends to go together with the title.
Wait, you just said that has nothing to do with me, and that has a lot to do with me because I just said that I'm cool with whatever, yo.
I know.
He was messing with your head.
Whatever. I feel bad I said yo again.
I do remember the
man.
The last time you said yo, you got a little upset with yourself.
I'm cool with whatever, dude.
Okay. So the name
so it
of
does
the
have something to do with
is,
me. Don't say no, it doesn't. When it does.
tonight we're discussing a space adventure hour.
The game's afoot.
All right.
Quite an episode.
Yes. Quite an episode indeed.
I didn't know this was a pajama party.
Well, okay. So there's a lot to talk about. First,
a lot to talk
just
about.
To give a preview, I already know that there's going to be a duty or no duty, right, Dan?
True.
There's at least one duty or no duty.
Indeed.
Are there, Dan, any lists?
Like, yeah.
Okay. So I'm going to take that as a yes.
Yeah.
Yes, there's going to be lists. Are there any that's and orders?
What was the question?
Are there any that's and orders?
Absolutely 100% never.
Okay. So there is duty or no duty. There is there's at least one list.
Indeed.
But there's no that's an order.
Nope.
If you're confused at home, don't worry about it, folks. Just kind of go with it. I think it'll become self-explanatory over the course of our discussion this evening.
The lists, I don't know, because there's like actually there are lists. There's a couple very small lists. There's one long list called the story, and it might not even be really worth going over because
it's just a bullet point of the story.
It's 9 points of like the mystery itself.
The mystery itself.
It might be a little bit too verbose to like go over. Each one of
slightly weak ass mystery.
Yeah, a little bit.
All right, we'll get to that. But first, we have a couple emails and we have a couple voicemails. So let's get.
I knew it was special.
Let's get through those swiftly so that we can
get
on
right
to our conversation. So the first email is from Ferdinand Cesarano.
Hi,
Ferdinand says, gentlemen. I was waiting for your episode on Wedding Bell Blues, which incidentally is erroneously labeled as as season 3, episode 01, when it is in fact season 3, episode 02. And I apologize for that. This is, I think, the first time I've ever made that error.
Oh, wow. On the podcast list, on the actual title.
Sabotage. I corrected it. I corrected it as soon as I got that email. So damn. Thank you, Ferdinand.
Yikes.
I was like, I can't believe I did that.
Yeah, that's unlike you, Patrick.
But anyway, he says he was waiting for our episode on Wedding Bell Blues because I felt sure that Dan was going to isolate the Spocko clip.
Ah, I certainly did, didn't I?
On that score, I was not disappointed.
Hell yeah, dude.
Right, that's right. Are you going to play it?
Well, I mean, I wasn't expecting Spocko. To, like...
I should have given you a heads
up. No, it's okay.
Spocko!
There we go. Spocko! I do sometimes like seeing Dan's nimble fingers dance across his iPad screen.
I would have gotten to it in time, but I hit the wrong episode, previous episode. If I'd hit the right one, I would have been able to.
If you'd like to know what it looks like to watch Dan do his sound clip manipulation
romantically,
particularly when he's looking for something that he hadn't expected to need. Mm-hmm. It looks like when Data is typing stuff in on a console. It really does. It looks exactly like that. You're like, Jesus Christ, look how fast his fingers are moving.
Gamemaker.
I'm glad you weren't disappointed, Ferdinand.
Dude.
He goes on to say, alas, what did disappoint me
You're welcome.
Was the fact that no mention was made of the great Saturday Night Live sketch in which the character of Spocko is introduced. And he provides a link, and he says, if you have not seen that sketch, prepare to enjoy a classic.
Sabotage.
And he sent us a link. It was during the era of the Kelvin timeline, because it's got Christopher Pine playing Kirk and Bobby Moynihan playing Spock. And there's the, you know, this whole Spocko thing. So if you do a search on YouTube for Star Trek Lost Episode SNL, you'll find that. And Ferdinand is correct. It is fun to watch. Mm-hmm. Okay, thanks, Fernand. Next up, we've got Emmanuel Croft has emailed us, and and he asks, how many people have sent you a message about Ken Foree? Ken Foree. And this is, of course, in reference to our discussion of the episode Shuttle to Ken Foree. And I had to look this up. I was not.
What was the question again?
The question was, how many people have sent you a message about Ken Foree?
I think just one.
Why do you keep saying it like that?
Because.
Because that's how they say it.
No, because
I think you hate me.
I looked it up. I was not familiar with this, but Ken Foree, according to Google, or Wikipedia, actually. Ken
Perhaps
Foree
I've misread the situation.
Is an American actor best known as the protagonist Peter from the horror film Dawn of the Dead. And as Roger Rockmore on the Nickelodeon television sitcom Kenan and Kel. I recognize him from Kenan and Kel. I didn't remember his name. But yeah, he was in Dawn of the Dead. And so since the Shuttle to Ken Foree...
Wait, the actor was in Kenan and Kel?
The actor was in Kenan and Kel.
Weird.
If you looked up the actor, you'd recognize his face. He's been in a lot of things. But
Kenan and Kel should be on Star Trek.
That would be kind of awesome.
Naming the episode Shuttle to Ken Foree is an Easter egg because Ken Foree was a major actor in the Dawn of the Dead.
Amazing.
So it's his... it's a zombie movie, and it was a zombie episode.
Movie.
So yeah, we missed that largely due to ignorance about the zombie format. Now,
do you have any idea how humiliating that is?
I do not. So now we've got a couple of voicemails. So the first voicemail is from Colonel Ty.
I'm nervous.
It's got Star Trek.
Hi.
This is Colonel Ty, Battlestar Galactica. I can hear you talking about us through a tear in the IP space-time continuum.
I know what's going on here.
And I'm pausing that for a second just to remind folks or let folks know. This is in reference to Dan during our discussion of hegemony was talking about how the Gorn ships looked organic. Yes. Like some of the Cylon ships in the Battlestar Galactica reboot.
You put that so much more succinctly and eloquently than I remember doing at the time. I think at the end, when I was describing it, I just couldn't think of the right
shoulder
words.
Of giants.
Okay.
Or you in particular, you're a giant.
Will you call me fit?
Well done.
I knocked you over and I climbed on top of you and I said something short.
Finally.
After so many years.
It was jealousy.
Okay, we'll let Colonel Ty continue.
I agree with Dan that the Gorn ships probably were taken from our universe and made from the Cylon interior guts.
I knew it.
Guts.
Yeah, the first time I saw one of those things, I almost retched up my lunch. I would give anything to fight these Gorn that they're dealing with over in the other sci-fi, as opposed to the Cylons that I have to look at all the time. It'd be so much easier to fight fracking lizards instead of sexy. It's just so hard to deal with. I don't know what I'm doing. I would give my right eye in order to fight lizards and aliens that look like the aliens from the other movie, from the other thing. Sadly, I think the commander would probably look at those and have a heart attack. So I will deal with the sexy Cylon force that we are currently combating. Message ends.
Thanks, Agamemnon.
Can you play him saying guts again?
Guts. I don't know.
This is a challenge for you.
Let me see here.
Yeah, the first time I saw one of those things, I almost retched
it was right,
up my
It was right
lunch.
Before that. It was right before that.
From our universe and made from the Cylon interior guts. Yeah, the first time I saw
great.
It.
Yeah, that was good guts. I know what he's doing there. I know what he's doing. I know what you're doing.
What a
thanks. Well, there you
I
go,
know what
Dan.
You're doing.
It's a common thing. People always write in or send voicemails. They're like, Dan is right. It's John Blue Sky. He's like, hey, Dan is right. Dan is often right.
Often right, Dan.
Often wrong soon. Okay. Again, thank you very much, Colonel Ty.
Thanks, Ty.
Next up, we have our old friend, Fraser.
I was listening to your most recent episode, and you were talking about hat on hat, and at some point, Jesse goes, that's a stovepipe hat on top of hat, and I fucking love that. You guys are the best. Fraser here. I'm the idiot. You guys rule and stuff. Cut out everything after stovepipe hat.
Thanks, Agamemnon.
Thank you, Fraser.
I didn't even put that in there because there was really no introduction.
Yeah,
to put it, but it didn't need one. It didn't need
started
one.
Started right in.
It just that's how it was supposed to start.
Yeah. Thank you, Fraser.
Thanks, Fraser. That was awesome.
And I think last week on our 300th episode, which, by the way, if you haven't listened to it, check it out. Our 300th episode, we did the It's Got Star Trek technical manual, where we provide some, we're at least attempted to provide some behind the scenes background and sort of details of the structure of the show, sort of an
That's
introduction to the show. It was fun. But one thing we noted was that often Jesse says some clever, insightful, or funny thing that Dan and I don't notice because we are in the thrall. All of each other.
Yes.
An accurate assessment.
And then I hear it when I'm editing the podcast, and I'm like, man, that Jesse guy is pretty fucking hilarious.
You push it as hard as you can.
All right. Thanks so much, everybody. If you'd like to send us an email, you can send it into feedback@itsgotstartrek.com.
That is a lie!
If you'd like to send us a voicemail, you can go to itsgotstartrek.com/record. All right. Let's dig into our discussion of this wacky episode of Star Trek Strange New Worlds.
It's another, they like to do the wacky episode.
They do. And
Which is cool.
Said before, I have a default bias for ambitious. Oh, I have to be clear again because remember last time I said that,
ambitious.
Dan thought I meant, was like, I'm ambitious and everyone else sucks. No.
Yeah.
When the TV shows do ambitious stuff, and it doesn't always work, right? But like Buffy the Vampire Slayer was great at this, right?
The thing, this season is doing a lot of that stuff.
Yeah. Now that you could argue that you don't need to do all the time.
Right.
There is an argument for what pace and the degree to which you might go. But I do like that they're doing some fun stuff here. Overall, I enjoy this episode. And I think a lot of people really enjoy this episode. I think there's some flaws, some fairly glaring flaws, but it was a fun opportunity to see
the
actors. It's a holodeck episode, you know.
So... Yeah, when the episode first started and I realized what was going on, at first I was like, I'm not really in the mood for this kind of, I just kind of want a normal one. But then at the scene when Sunny goes, when I heard TK's pitch for The Last Frontier, I knew it was special. Between when she said Frontier and TK, Pike, aka Anson Mount, makes a little happy noise and a little happy face. And then he makes, you know, and then he makes this like little, I think it was, I think it's, no, that's Chapel. I think it's is it this one? It might be that one. I don't know. It was some kind of reaction he gave. Like, he gave this little happy sort of reaction to Sonny Lupino complimenting him.
And some Mount steals the show with this character.
And that's what I say. When that happened, that's when I immediately caught my attention. Just that little expression on his face. Yeah. Like, I was like, that's Anson Mount. Like, going from super smooth-ass Pike to this guy, that's amazing, and I'm totally buying it.
And the hair was glorious
like,
and hilarious.
I was buying that whole thing, and that, at that moment, it caught my attention, and from then I was pulled in, because, and I'm not saying the Anson Mount was the only good thing about this episode, but that point is when I started to really get invested
they
in it,
all
for whatever
had, like,
reason.
Funny characters, but his was, like, the best.
His was amazing. Yeah. Like, he was amazing. Like, it's just amazing, like I said, I already said it, but the fact that he plays such a smooth, awesome dude, and then he went to this character and it was totally believable. I wasn't even like trying to like imagine him as that, like, he
the
was
Kirk the guy was just Kirk. It was just the same thing.
But
like, he was different.
And Wesley was doing a parody of a parody. Anson Mount was creating some bizarre new character.
And I didn't have to try to convince myself that he was that character. Like, I just bought in naturally, because he just did such a good job.
The
with
body
that.
Language, the costuming, his face. He made his neck look all kind of fat. Because he kind of shrank his head back.
And like a funny gut.
That's what happened when he gave that little happy.
He was like holding on
to
it.
He gave this face. There's four TK moments that I really love.
Is this one of your lists?
This is one of my lists. It's a 4-point list. Right. So one was right there when Sonny was complimenting him, and as he's complimenting, he like has this little smile and goes, and then Jesse, what you were talking about when he was telling Kirk, aka Saint.
Right.
What was his last name?
Maxwell Saint,
as opposed to Maxwell Smart.
When he was telling him to deliver his lines like a human.
Yeah. Like an actual human.
And TK Alls had his hands clasped over his stomach, like, play it. Like, that was awesome. The scene where he's talking in front of the projector, like that's where you see the shot of him, and behind him, the whole background is just the projector screen, and there's all this projector goo, or all the staticky, whatever you call that film shit. Right. And like the way.
Film grain?
Yeah, the film grain, the way like they do that shot, it's like a surreal shot.
You know who directed this episode?
Was it Jonathan?
Jonathan Frakes.
Yeah. And then when Pike goes at the end, when he has the gun and he goes to Lon, he goes, "I'm not putting the gun down because I'm not the killer, but someone else here is." And then Lon goes, "Me?" And then he just goes like, and he has like this look on his face as he's looking down the gun that I can't describe, but it's amazing. The whole presentation was awesome.
Well, and he's also holding the gun in such a hilarious
way. Right.
He's
right.
Like, "I can shoot you or I can shoot myself. You don't know."
Yeah. So
it's going either way.
Right. And so I thought it was, I thought he did a wonderful job.
Yeah. Actors really do. I won't say they carried this episode, because this episode was fun. The concept was fun. There was some retreading. Mm-hmm. That's not necessarily a bad thing. I don't like there's the whole term about fan service. Mm-hmm. I usually am not worried about that. I have no problem with it. I wouldn't say that this did too much fan service, but again, you start with the whole, because they have that funny gag with Pike where they're like, this is called the Recreation room. The joke being is not like recreation room.
Recreation room.
Although it's a funny joke, it does
hologram?
Makes it seem like Pike can't
holodeck,
like he can't read or something.
Right.
But then of course Una pipes in and says like, "Well, holodeck is for short and it's better." And it's like, well,
holodeck.
I don't know. It'd be kind of fun because in TAS when they finally implement this, right? And so that's another part of the gag, right? Because they talk about how at the end of the episode, it's too much trouble. It's not too much power of the ship. Yeah. We'll do it in the future. I'm sure everyone thinks, they mean TNG days, because that's in Encounter at Farpoint. They're all like, "What's this new thing? It's the holodeck." But if you watch TAS, they had a fucking holodeck, but they called it a recreation room.
Stranger Worlds is still a good few years before TOS.
Yeah, exactly. So it's about 10 years before that TAS episode.
There was also another joke, ongoing joke, when every time Kirk saw Spock, he's like, "Who is this guy?"
Yeah, I know. I really like that. Yeah,
but is he my replacement?
Yeah, but the holodeck.
Holodeck.
Holograms?
Holograms.
The hollow.
Hologram?
Holodeck?
Hologram.
The point is generating. I see it coalescing in Dan's frontal lobes. He's rubbing his frontal lobes to stimulate them.
Gears are turning.
To pull the components of the argument he was about to make. He was about to make an assertion.
What were we talking about? We're talking about
you just kept saying the holodeck.
I remember. So yeah, they kept talking about the holodeck as in terms of like, it's great for games and stuff like that, right? Like that's that seemed to be like the foundation, the sort of what they were testing, their idea behind this is like, we want the crew to have things to do while we're away on these super long missions.
Space is boring.
And they didn't mention, Lon mentioned this, but it sort of in a different context. Like they didn't mention the fact that it's not just for games. Like, you can use it for battle simulations and shit too. Yeah. Now, Lon did mention that. She's like, well, I've done a lot of battle simulations. And
of course,
so, and they're has. And they're like, well, hence why we got you.
Kind of like what Worf does with the holodeck.
Right, but, pretty much Worf. Yeah.
But like, so they were like, that's why we got you, because you've done battle simulations.
That's
but
why
they,
we got
but
you.
But they didn't directly say, like, this would be great for battle simulations. Yeah. They only mentioned it. They only mentioned that their purpose was that for fun and games. And I don't know, like, it seems like, yeah, if it's just for fun and games, why did they put so much effort into it? I think if they simply added like, oh, and battle simulations is great too, I think that would have given a lot more reason to spend as much effort as they, I know games.
It seems like it'd be other way around, because the military is going to want to do battle simulations, but the side is like, oh yeah, you can also just have fun with this while you're on a long voyage.
Right, yeah, it'd be like more of a side thing. Like, and it's important for people to have games and shit to do and keep them entertained.
Psychologically, but otherwise they go crazy.
But like, it just, I would have bought into the effort they put into it more if they specifically were like, we want battle simulations. You know they were going to use it for that, but they, like, that wasn't their main focus. So I thought that was kind of...
Exactly.
There was, by the way, back to the TK thing real quick.
Did you conclude that list?
I did.
All four of the list items?
All four of the list items. I did. I did do that. But there was God. There are a lot of sounds in this, and I'm having a hard time.
Is this a sound situation?
This is...
Look at this guy, Jesse. He's freaking out over here.
I know.
I've seen it before.
You don't need to put this much pressure on yourself, Dan.
I know, but I think I do.
I know, he's looking at the clock, and he's like, oh, Patrick's going to say, we got to go to break soon.
Time for a break.
Look out. Time to play my little sound.
Time's ticking.
When he after the gun scene, he runs out of the room, and he's like...
I didn't...
Sorry, I just had to mention that.
What did he say?
He's just saying, I didn't.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't.
The guy who runs out of the room. Sorry. Anyway, back to that was a moment past that I hearkened back to in an awkward fashion, and now demand that we go back to what we were talking about. I arguably should have just dropped it and moved on, and not and just been like, I didn't need to make that point. The time passed. I had my opportunity, and I missed it. Instead of trying to shoehorn it into our conversation, but this is where we are right now.
Okay.
So let's go back to what we were talking about.
Human is full of words.
I think we're just generically talking about the show. You know, just sort of hopping around.
Just hopping. Is that that's okay if we hop around?
Well, yeah, but it is good to start at the beginning where they open up with. Again, it's fun. This show, Frontier?
The Frontier.
The final frontier.
The last frontier.
Ah, yes. The last frontier.
So I found a little confusing about that is... Because
it's the aspect ratio, right? You got pissed off at the aspect ratio?
No, I didn't get pissed off at the aspect.
Okay, just very briefly
what happened
at this
to
point?
You, Dan?
So,
red alert.
One of my quibbles with this very nicely produced show, definitely very well acted show. One of my quibbles, and I love Jonathan Frakes. I thought he did a great job here, but I have a few very high level, but fairly significant critiques of some of the choices he made. I'll save the others for later. What I'll say right now is the fucking aspect ratio. So the standard aspect ratio for Star Trek Strange New Worlds is 2.39:1.
Okay.
2.39:1 is extra widescreen.
I think I followed that.
It's cinematic style, you know, where there's black bars on the top and bottom. So if you have a standard HD TV or 4K TV, it is a 16:9 format.
You don't think I know that.
But Strange New Worlds is 2.39:1, right? Okay.
Uh-huh.
Right?
How did you deduce this to us?
Very cinematic. I love when shows use different aspect ratios in order to make some cinematic point,
it's
because
like
there's different language. So now they're showing us a 1960s style goofy ass, cheap ass sci-fi show.
Right.
Ambitious.
It's like Flash Gordon.
And what they do is they change the aspect ratio. They don't show that goofy ass show in 2.39:1.
Right.
They changed the aspect ratio
to a more modern one.
To 16:9.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Why would they do that?
Yeah, that's a
4:3. It's right there.
Madness.
Do 4:3. Do these. Do those shots in 4:3. And I'm not talking not the holodeck shots. Not the holodeck. That's fine, because when they're in the holodeck, it's 2.39:1.
I think.
But when they're doing the TV show, 4:3. Come on, four.
God damn it!
Come on, it's very easy. Okay.
You're damn right I would.
You're all right. Damn right.
All right. I want Dan to have full time to tell his point.
No, please go. I'm having fun over here.
And I want Jesse to have.
Don't worry, I've got everything under control.
To finish his laugh. So we're gonna take a break.
Wait, are we? Is it really?
Look at the clock. We gotta take a break. God. So we're gonna take a break. And when we get back, well, there's gonna be more of this. We will be right back.
Computer, Arch.
Okay, and we're back. And that
all worship to us.
Sorry. Yes, all worship to us. I was going
to
note that hissing was Jesse Snake.
Ah.
He does a
lot. Our fan base is small, but it's quite passionate.
I love that. Well, that's please save that one.
Yes, definitely.
I wonder if that'll be an actually saved one, because remember when we had Jesse from Open Pipe?
Can do that.
And Jesse was commenting, he's like, one of my favorite things about It's Got Star Trek is how many times Dan will be like, I'm going to put that in the favorites, and then you never hear it again.
So he's a communist?
Does no one here care about my vision?
Okay, so yes, we talked about the aspect ratio. Do you recall what your point was, Dan?
I was going to say a couple things about the opening. I liked the opening, but it seemed like it wasn't really... It wasn't really in-universe, really, because it's not like a holodeck program they had. It was only referenced once later as a reason to sort of give an excuse as to why they're... Yeah. No, the excuse they gave for why they were using the same people on the ship was when Scotty was like, the only way we can get this is from taking our transporter buffers.
The old Our Man Bashir gambit.
And so I think...
Not Gambit parts one or two, just Our Man Bashir.
I think my guess as to why Scotty was like, we're taking from the transporter buffer to create these characters, I think that was like the writer's way of saying, this is why they all happen to be the same characters.
Well, yes.
But like, and then they referenced that show like at the beginning of The Next Mystery, but that show never actually happened anywhere during
the
episode.
Actors in that show in the mystery.
Right, but like it has nothing, like, because it's a hollow, it's all based around a hollow thing. This is a hollow thing that never got used or something. Like, I get why they did it, but at the same time it didn't really fit into what happened in the episode.
They wanted to give the actors the opportunity to act as a goofy character.
Right.
I like the Mbenga guy. He was great.
So they
were all great.
It was 84. Mm-hmm. You know, it was an 84 month mission they were on,
right,
which was seven years, which is interesting. I thought that was interesting.
Like that the ship all had like some gears and some tapes and stuff. Now, like kind of like TOS, but like even more like steampunk. Or
and
something.
Then did you notice that when she was talking about
human food piles,
you see how much she enunciates that?
Yes.
And that's because of the outtake at the end.
Pies?
When she's talking about like human food pies. I think that's
the pies again. That was one of my favorite lines of the whole episode, was Paul Wesley saying pies?
Pies?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think and it wasn't until the second watch through that I realized the reason she was probably enunciating it so much is because at the end she was like, is it human food pies? Yeah. And then that's when he was like,
pies?
And so she was trying to make it clear that she wasn't saying pies.
Pies are good.
Food piles.
Piles. This episode, just to extend that point, this episode improves on second viewing. And I don't, improves isn't fair. When you watch it a second time, you see how it like the point Dan just made, it really does hold together in a lot of ways, even though I'm going to later criticize the core mystery.
Right. So,
I'm not criticizing it now. I'm going to criticize it later.
I liked Zipnop. Now I was, and I know that
with all the eyes and shit.
Yeah. So I know. Yeah. I know it must have been done on purpose, but I was really trying hard to like, unlike, Anson Mount as TK Bellows, where I didn't have to like force myself to buy into it. I couldn't buy into those tentacle eyes. I kept looking at them, being like, I know those tentacle eyes are supposed to be eyeballs, but
I can see her arms holding.
You see her arms holding. Plus, she has eyes on her regular head. Like, she has regular head eyes. And these
how many eyes does this lady
need? She has regular head eyes, and then she has tentacle eyes. And so I'm like, I couldn't. My mind wouldn't allow me to like. It's like when you're looking at an image drawn in 3D, and for whatever reason, your brain can't parse it and make it 3D. I couldn't, but that's okay, because that's what they were going for. But one thing that kind of broke me out of it was when I think they went a little too far is when Shaw, when they were talking about wanting their brain cells, and Shaw was like, but we need it for many science reasons or whatever. Yeah. I was like, that was a little far. I thought that was a little like, I know what you're doing. You're like making fun of the show and stuff, but it was almost like a little too like on the nose.
I think part of the issue they had with this parody is I understand the literary reason why they needed to make it look silly and absurd.
But like they went too far with like some of the lines.
Part of it is that like, I know they didn't mean
it was like too silly.
They didn't mean it in an insulting way, but when you go back and watch TOS, there are some cheesy costumes, cheesy special effects.
Yeah, but nobody.
But it really it stands up way better than Lost in Space or fucking Doctor Who or some of that shit. Yeah. And nothing against those; they're still great. But you know what I'm saying? They made this look more Doctor Who-y than TOS.
So,
in my opinion,
I bought into them making a silly Zipknot costume that I couldn't picture because I was like, okay, I can imagine that being in a '70s show. That's a good parody. Yeah. But when she's like, we need it for science reasons, that was an obvious parody on Technobabble, and it was like too on the nose, and it was just too
and
like
some of the other Technobabble I also thought was a little more goofy than it needed to be, but they had to thread the needle.
There was two more points. One was there was weird grammar that I think they must have done on purpose. It was when she goes we can't give them our brain cells, we need it for many science reasons.
Yeah,
we need it's like we can't give them our brain cells, we need it. She said she should have said we need them, but she said we need. Apparently, she needed. They already started taking her brain cells because she couldn't.
God.
And then later,
maybe that's the joke. If that's sophisticated.
Well, but then later, Chapel goes, "We're gone," and Ortega, who's Lee, goes, "And so is our brain cells. Wouldn't it be so our
well,
brain? I don't know.
It should be.
If your brain cells is gone, then you're not, you know, using the proper.
Yeah, I mean, that's not a time you'd use is, would it? So sometimes the is pops into
depends,
a funny.
Depends on what the definition of is.
It is what you is.
No, it's sometimes difficult to like figure out what's singular and plural based upon what you're referencing. But I think in that instance, so is our brain. It would be so is our brain, but so are our cells. Anyway, it doesn't fucking matter. The last
so
thing
is
it was
so
awkward.
The last thing is they had those outtakes, which were all, I think, choreographed, except I bet you the one where they were the. The director was being like, okay, go left, go right. Remember when they were like, had the Photomos beam or whatever? Yeah. Ortega's Lee, like she looks so happy to be like pulling those levers.
She flies the ship.
But like when they showed an outtake of them, they're supposed to be swaying back and forth like the ship got hit and they fucked it up. I'm wondering if that was like actually a real outtake.
That seemed like
the only believable one.
I bet it was choreographed, but based off of literally decades of real incidents of that happening
like
all the time
the
where somebody
way.
Goes left when everyone else goes right.
Also, Kirk was doing the Riker maneuver with
that
the leg
hilarious.
Over the chair, the two big chair, and then Kirk did the Jack Nicholson / Robert De Niro kind of look at the end. Yeah. It was like a mix of both of them at the end.
But the Riker maneuver, it's worth pointing out for two reasons, in addition to just being funny. Reason number one, of course, Jonathan Frakes directed this episode. He also directed Those Old Scientists, in which Boimler... does the Riker maneuver.
Thanks, Agamus!
At one point when he's tooling around on the Enterprise. So it could be that Frakes is trying to get somebody to do the Riker maneuver in every episode he directs. So that's something to watch out for whenever he directs another episode. See if he has somebody do the Riker maneuver.
He's actually doing me a favor.
And the thing about this Riker maneuver being so hilarious is that the chair is... comically tall.
Yeah, I know.
Like obviously he wouldn't be able to. It's absurd that he did, and of course he fucking knocks the whole shit to pieces.
Yeah.
And the Paul Wesley, who I like Paul Wesley. I'm not the biggest fan of his Kirk, but I gotta say his physical comedy here was really, really good.
You're damn right.
You're damn right I would. God damn it.
Okay, so we talked a little bit about La'an being, we get why she's selected, she has this experience.
As an intro to what you're about to say, this is the episode, this must be a tribute to the episode where Data wanted a Sherlock Holmes story that he couldn't solve.
Well,
which
I was going to get into that.
Exactly. I'm sorry,
this could, some people have used this as a critique, other people have said it's just a fun homage, but yes, La'an effectively, although not quite as clearly, uses the old Data gag where in Elementary, My Dear Data, which we discussed. We discussed that in episode 145 of IceGST. So if you want to scroll back or go on our website,
it was that long ago.
Go on our website, find the search bar. If you're on mobile, it's all the way at the bottom of the.
What can I say? I'm a trendsetter.
At the bottom of the page, because we have poor website design. But
you can, I do like a good challenge.
Search for it. That was a fun episode. Elementary, My Dear Data is one of my favorite episodes of Star Trek ever.
Really interesting.
Yeah, and I'm going to use it as a comparison to this episode in a couple ways. For but real. The key one that people have observed is that La'an essentially asks the computer for a challenge that that can meet her. And she's got the extra bonus of having this weird thing on her neck, which confused me the first time through, but I understood better the second time that it was recording her emotions or something like that. Or
oh, is that the thing that Spock was talking to her about?
Yeah, it's real brief.
Right, and I remember he talked about you've got this thing on you, and I was never clear what that thing was
on
supposed
to be doing.
On the second
watch, I understood it was for the hologram. It was gathering hologram? Data to help put together
holograms?
A test. And then she did, like, in Elementary, My Dear Data, Data is solving all these mysteries easily left and right because he knows everything. Geordi challenges him to, and Data asks the computer to make an enemy that is worthy of Data that would challenge Data. And
you're a hologram.
And that's a hilarious gag. It produces Moriarty. It's a wonderful episode. It's a season two episode. Pulaski episode is great. This episode basically does the same thing with La'an.
So you need to convince it you're a hologram too.
Hologram. So I didn't mind that so much.
I didn't mind it because
it's a cool idea.
No, I didn't. It didn't bother me.
But when you start stacking it up, I can see why somebody would get sort of a little bit put off to be like, oh, it's a holodeck thing. Oh, the holodeck's malfunctioning. Oh, it's malfunctioning because the person asked it a prompt and the computer interpreted it in a hilarious way.
That's classic Star Trek.
Yeah. Okay. I get why that could be aggravating. I'm fine with it largely, but it was noticed.
So when classic. Yeah. So you Patrick, you mentioned earlier when they were talking about like we shouldn't do this holodeck thing. You know.
Are we doing? Are we doing like what is that? That band with the beards? Is that
ZZ Top?
ZZ Top. Is that a ZZ Top? Is that how?
It sounds like that.
Is that ZZ Top?
That's every ZZ Top.
Remember, they're in Back to the Future 3 and they're. That's a great one.
Yeah.
Anyway, Dan, you were saying.
So I was saying, when Lon was like, you know, these holodecks are fucked up, and Pike goes,
how about we recommend that it be locked in a box deep underground somewhere?
Was that like, you know, I mean, this was an episode where they actively said we shouldn't fuck with holograms, holodecks, because they fuck things up too much. That must have been kind of a joke about like holodecks in general, because the holodecks are always fucking shit up on all of Star Trek, as everybody knows, but nobody ever is like, we should stop using these holodecks. Like, that question never enters the conversation. And this is like the only time it's entered the conversation that we shouldn't have these things that keep like causing the ship to get all
fucked
up.
They just sort
of
put it off for the future.
So this is
great opportunities for sort of sexual assault and all sorts of other weird activities.
So anyway, and the other
real quick, do you think that part of Pike's response, because his response was pretty aggressive, and he said it all quickly and cutely and fast. You want to play that again?
How about we recommend that it be locked in a box deep underground somewhere?
You know, remember we had Fast Talking Burnham during Discovery?
Oh, right.
This is Fast Talking Pike.
How about we recommend that it be locked in a box deep underground somewhere?
That to me, they don't make it explicit in the show, but that to me, that doesn't read as a captain who's concerned about the safety of his ship. That reads to me a captain who saw a picture of what his character looked like in the holodeck. I think he saw TK character and was like weirded out.
Yeah.
He was like, oh man, that's weird. I didn't know that it would do that.
He was embarrassed.
Fuck that shit.
He was like, look at my hair.
Yeah.
The other joke in the episode was the whole Palia wasn't there. Last time it was because she hated meetings in the previous episode.
Yeah.
This time she wasn't in the episode because she was on shore leave.
As opposed to just because she's a very expensive, prominent actor.
Exactly. I thought that was sort of like, I felt that was kind of a joke on the holodeck, how they were talking about the holodecks.
I hadn't considered that, but I think
it could be.
Certainly that's a plausible and perhaps even a pleasant interpretation.
Now, I'm not going to toot my own horn here.
It sounds like it might be.
No, but I actually guessed that it was Spock. That was the thing.
I'm impressed. I did not guess it. Now, normally, I'm pretty good at this.
Now,
Fuck-o.
Okay, I'm putting that in the best of right now.
All right, well, we'll see.
We'll see. It'll be there. It's there. There you go. Now, what I didn't guess is you could say I got it wrong because I didn't guess that it was actually Hollow Spock. I thought it was like Spock. In my head, I was like, I was like, I bet it's Spock, but I can't figure out.
You thought it was just Spock fucking around with
him. Well, yeah, so right. I was like, I can't figure out what would motivate him to do this other than the fact that he was really dedicated to this idea of like giving Lon something that she really wanted. You know what I mean? But like, and I was like, that's not good enough because
out later he was dedicated to giving Lon something that she wanted. we'll have that uncomfortable conversation in the third break, I think.
Oh yeah. Right. Well,
you push it as hard as you can.
Anyway, so yeah, I sort of thought it was that at first until the ship started getting in danger. And then I was like, I don't think Spock would have run this that hard, but I did figure it had to have been Spock because they were going through all these characters like, and all the things kept like not following through that. And there was a lot of weird distractions. Like Una dying was like a weird distraction Sonny Lupino.
By the way, Sonny Lupino was an avatar for Lucille Ball.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of meta stuff going on in here. I think some of it worked. I think all of it worked. I don't know.
What about like the, he doesn't watch TV and he was, and he goes.
So he's a communist?
That one.
Yeah. Okay. So like, for example, Sonny Lupino, clearly not an exact replica of Lucille Ball in real life, but Lucille Ball, hugely important to the history of Star Trek because it was a show that she personally supported. And Desilu Studios.
It was at their studios.
Yeah, it was at their studios. But
I thought it was creative how they did the intro. I was just thinking about the original Star Trek production.
Well, we should talk about the intro in a second. When we look at the other characters, TK clearly is intended to be, at least in some ways, a Gene Roddenberry avatar. But the personality was completely different.
No.
So, I think some people were just saying, like, I thought they were insulting to Gene Roddenberry. Like, that clearly wasn't Gene Roddenberry. He was fitting that niche. And, it was that slot, but a very different character.
And speaking of maybe a little too on the nose, and speaking of Gene Roddenberry, or sort of these references, when Uhura slash...
Her speech?
Joni Gloss... Yeah, her speech, like at first, like
super meta,
like the first two or three sentences of her speech, I was like, okay, you could have stopped it there, but she kept going
could just keep going and people would love it for generations.
Yeah, I know. It started getting a little, I hate to be the one. And I hate to be the one that say preachy, but that's how it kind of started. Yeah. But like I said, if they just kept the first half of her speech, I would have been like, yeah, that's good enough. But they went a little long.
What was weird about that speech, and especially on the second viewing, I looked out for it. Because I remember it making me feel a little odd on the first viewing.
Indeed.
On the second viewing, I listened to the speech. Taken by itself, I really liked it. I was actually almost tearing up. I was like, "This is
in context,
this is a really nice idea." But in the story, it just sort of, it was weird. It was a little, it was exposition-y, except it wasn't exposition. It wasn't like explaining like the plot or anything. It was just saying some stuff that the audience would recognize because the audience likes this show. Which is fine, but I don't know.
Maybe I missed the point of something, but she was talking about how it was canceled and TK was talking about how it was canceled, but then it's revealed later that it wasn't canceled.
I wasn't clear on
that. See, that's the thing. Later he was just saying they were like, the show can write itself after the first season. They just replaced me, is what he said at the end.
Oh yeah, he's fired, but the show is still.
So did Joni Gloss not know? I guess since she was his agent, she wouldn't need. She didn't know yet that he got replaced. I don't know.
This might dovetail into the conversation this mystery. It sort of doesn't hold.
Okay,
together.
It's just computers.
So man. So back to real quick back to the Spock.
Spocko.
The Hollow Spock situation.
Hollow Spock.
Which I liked how...
Would that we all could have a Hollow Spock.
So Lon was talking about Amelia Moon. Moon, by the way, because when there's a lot of Star Treks, there's a lot of stars and there's a lot of moons.
Absolutely,
like Amelia Moon. She was talking about Amelia Moon.
You mean Carmen Sandiego?
Yeah,
exactly.
I know. But she's a detective. She was an outsider, but she was really good at solving crimes. Mm-hmm. And like that, I was just talking about that like a week or two ago, I think, about how like all these crime shows, the detective is always an outsider.
Yeah.
She put it a lot more succinctly than I did. Yeah. But I said succinct twice now in this episode. I never use that word. But
You're never that succinct.
Damn. I was fucked up.
Oh man, Dan's all
sad. You know what I think? I think you hate me.
Yeah, so that just goes to show. It's like that's what makes a great one of the things that makes a great detective story is an outsider detective. But Spock, okay, one problem with the mystery I had was so Spock was the thing, right? And Spock from the very start
was the thing.
He was Hollow Spock was from the very start of the program. Yeah. It was Hollow Spock. Yeah. So during this whole time,
so when you watch it a second time, the story all where it
because he's in there.
It makes sense.
He's so when
that's that part works.
Well, okay, but is she in that Hollow program the entire time?
As soon as she walks into the Hollow program with and Spock is standing there,
I know that's Hollow Spock.
She's in there for the entire time.
But at no point she doesn't leave at any point.
She doesn't leave at any
point. So there would have never been a point where she could have come across real Spock.
No right. chance of running into real Spock. And because I guess she didn't have access to the task manager, she couldn't shut down the process.
Right.
She got into one of those problems where you're like, I'm trying to close down the app, but Adobe Photoshop just will not close down.
I know.
What do I do?
And how did Scotty know that in order to, he was so confident that he knew it's like they just got to beat the mission and then they can quit. Like, how did he know that?
It's a little silly.
How did he know that? Although I do like that they brought back, when was the last time they brought back
That was like the a la Moraine. That was like a move along home concept. You got to finish the game in order to get out.
Yeah, but I mean, with the move along home, it made more sense because that was dictated by the aliens. This is just like a computer program. You can't leave until it's in. And guess what? Okay, so earlier, like what I was just saying, when was the last time they said Arch?
Computer, Arch.
When was the last time? That was TNG, first season. That was like first season.
Maybe some Deep Space Nine. I can't remember Voyager.
I like that they brought that back, but they were saying end program and it wasn't ending program. Yeah. So how did they get out? They got out by saying end program. For some reason, end program
after they completed.
Yes,
the
after
but
they
that was part of the program.
But that was after they completed the thing. So how is anyone supposed to know that end program would have worked after you completed the mission? What changes about the programming that end program only works in that scenario after you beat? It didn't make any sense.
No, it implies that the computer was being malicious.
Yeah, right. It must have been
maybe not malicious with the qualia of malfeasance, but rather it just the cold programmatic logic that it determined that it needed to fuck with this young officer.
Yeah, because that's what that's the only explanation
for. The officer asked me to do this to them.
And that's the only other explanation for why the safety protocols were off.
The most badass.
I know that safety protocols.
Or it told her the safety protocols were off. Well, they may not have actually been.
Okay, I know that in Star Trek, well, she got cut. And so there's evidence that. That she
evidence
there is
evidence.
No, there's evidence that she got that the safety protocols were off because she got cut with a chandelier. Yeah. But like the only explanation for why that the safety protocols went off is that it was being malicious because otherwise the issue they were having is they didn't have enough power. Right? That was like what was going on, and that was what was fucking with the Enterprise. There was not enough power to run.
Power and computing resources.
Right, so
I think the combination.
Why would the lack of power result in the safety protocols being turned off? I know that safety protocols going off is like, that's a plot device that they use in a lot of Star Trek, but I'm just wondering, like, what about the situation caused the safety protocols to go off?
It's a little silly. I guess it's because it's like the first time they used a holodeck or something.
It's like you'd think that safety protocols would just be like default. Like it seems like it would take more power to have the safety protocols off than on. It seems like it would take less power to have a hologram that didn't fuck with you in any way. You know?
So here's the deal.
It's just a video game.
I have less problem with the idea of with the scenario that you have to complete
scenario.
You have to complete some tasks, some missions, some game in order to escape the labyrinth.
I was okay with an Alan Moraine, like I said, because it was dictated by the aliens.
I'm saying I'm okay with it here. I'm okay even when it doesn't totally make sense, because that is like an ancient myth, right? That's something that's repeated through like thousands of years of human tales to before writing, the idea that you might be put into a situation where you have no choice but to complete this thing in order to get to the end.
Like,
so that's fine.
But
I'm not into the somewhat lazy, the safety protocols are off for no particularly that's a little more annoying.
And well, the thing is, and there's a lot of stories, there are several stories you're right about like how they have to complete the thing before they can get out of the thing. I just don't think it was explained that well in the this episode. It just didn't the reason for it. Just because it's something they do, it still needs a setup, and there wasn't much of a setup.
Two key weak points to this episode, and again, minor weak points. I still very much enjoyed it. I enjoyed the character development. I enjoyed getting to see the actors play as different characters and clearly having fun doing it.
I liked it when Scotty was like talking to like the people like through the film and like with like the flashlight.
Yeah, that was fun. That was a fun gag.
He was wearing those clothes that
again,
were, like,
sort of a
clothes.
A silly gag, but fun. But real quick, let me just finish my point because it's brief. Which is, I liked all that stuff, but the two weak things for me were I thought the mystery was just sort of confusing and not that interesting.
Yeah,
right.
I think we needed some more of like a Roger Rabbit Chinatown type something going on.
I mean, the moon doesn't give up until she gets her man, and neither
a little
do
more
I.
Dixon Hill.
I think they were almost there, but just not quite. And the other thing is, I can't remember what the other thing is, but I will remember it after Dan tells his point.
Jesse, you were talking, what were you just talking about? You were talking about the,
this is the part of the show.
I know.
We're all old men.
I know.
What were we talking about?
You were just making a point.
What is this Star Trek these kids keep talking about?
You were just making a point. Oh yeah, the Scotty thing.
Yeah,
in the film.
Yeah.
So
are you talking about Forbidden Planet?
When Scotty was like, he was dressed up as like somebody in like the crew.
So,
yes.
So I don't have a problem at all with this. I just think it's kind of funny that like, so after the cut was over, they decided to keep, isn't film expensive? Like, they decided to keep filming an argument between TK and Saint. And then after that, the cameraman decided to keep filming Scotty being like, hey, this is how you get out of it.
In 16:9 format.
And during that era, like, wouldn't they be like, hey, that film is money, man.
Yeah,
like,
it's like
stop recording this weird bullshit. Didn't have a problem because it's all part of the holodeck, but it's just kind of funny. I was like, wow, they really don't give a shit about that, I guess. I would if I were them, but you know. It's fine.
TV.
It's fine.
Yeah.
It's fine.
No, it is fine. Those are little funny things. Oh, Jesse's Mr.
Here's that time.
Mr. Sneezy. This is another thing we talked about last week.
A tangle. Even worth discussing.
One of our regular segments is... As Jesse starts sneezing.
He is sensitive.
How many was that?
I don't know, it was a lot, but like...
I could barely look at him.
Too many.
Sometimes we can cut them out. Sometimes, wait, what's the fucking point?
I'm good at what I do. I'm good at what I do. I'm good at what I do.
Anyway, so the mystery is a... It's a little bit. It's a
small, pathetic, human food piles.
Human.
It's a little bit weak, and you might find things working a little bit better if they had something a little bit more engaging for the mystery.
The story was confusing because it was just a series of like, this is why you did it, and then being like, no, that's not why I did it at all. Or I didn't do it. I didn't do it, and this is why I didn't do it.
I was just getting confused. And
she was
like,
making,
what's the deal?
She was jumping to all these conclusions that were incorrect. And so that's kind of what it was, is just they were toying around. And then there was the distraction with Sonny Lupino dying, which was just kind of like a distraction. It was all just seems like it was all put in there to do just that, to confuse you into like being like, I guess it's a mystery. Like, I think it was just, it wasn't there to try to solve. It was just there to confound, I think, is basically what was going on with that mystery.
Carmen Sandiego.
And that's the problem I had with it is that... I was inadvertently just going to repeat your exact point because it is the problem I had with it that
what we do here is hard.
It wasn't inherently
sometimes bad things happen.
It was just like here's the barrier that Laon has to overcome, but it's not a particularly interesting barrier. It doesn't seem to really make much sense, and that's where I would like to compare it again to Elementary, My Dear Data, before we get into break, just talking real briefly about one of my other critiques of the episode is the way it was filmed and not just the aspect ratio, but
you really hate that.
No, but the choices that they made did not to me evoke a murder mystery story from the time, you know, the timeline it was set up. And whereas if you look at Elementary, My Dear Data, that episode did a brilliant job of making you think that it was a period piece mystery, Sherlock Holmes mystery.
Totally.
It looked very similar to what you might see on TV watching Jeremy Brett's Sherlock Holmes.
That's true.
You know, with the smoky streets and all that stuff. And the way they filmed the camera angles they picked were meant to evoke a specific British style murder mystery.
Wow.
Period piece murder
that
mystery.
Is a sensory overload.
That's where it's at.
This one, I thought it was very well directed and engaging, but it didn't really come off as like a murder mystery to me. It wasn't filmed like a murder mystery. It wasn't filmed like a Columbo or a Murder, She Wrote or a Sherlock Holmes or any of these things. It was kind of like a mishmash of different things. And I thought that was, it was
a holodeck episode.
It was a missed opportunity to, like, when you're in the holodeck,
holograms?
make it look like something. And I kind of don't think it did. It was edited in a much more modern way. Still
you're
fun.
A hologram.
But,
holograms?
So you need to convince it you're a hologram too.
Hologram.
Holograms.
Okay, we're gonna take another break.
What?
Yes, and when we get back.
Wait.
What? When we get back, we will conclude our discussion.
Okay, Kirk.
Of A Space Adventure Hour.
Actual humor.
Be right back.
I am available should you decide you need my assistance.
And we're back.
I'm here to assist in any way I can. Perhaps we should sit down and calmly discuss this.
All right.
What should we discuss? How about three bits of lore.
How about data?
There's 203 people on board this Enterprise.
Well, sounds about right for this era by the TOS
They
era.
Really stack them in.
Yeah, it's about 400 and something in TOS. Mm-hmm. But 203 is about right for this.
Well, that's what they said.
Yeah.
So it's not just about
right. Well, okay. The producers have done their research. Is what I'm saying. I'm saying that the producers have done the research.
So also number two.
All the producers have done the research.
Number two, holodecks need their own dedicated server room and power source in order to Scotty. According to Scotty, right. In order for them to not to fuck with shit. So don't integrate it with the rest of the ship.
Which is very sensible, and which is how they tend to be set up in the future, because so many of the holodeck tales in TNG, Deep Space Nine, etc. rely on the fact that the holodeck has its own independent systems to cause all sorts
holograms?
Of tomfoolery.
Wait, so you're saying
hijinks.
That the fact that they have their own dedicated server room and power source is the reason why they're causing wreak havoc in
the
future?
No.
Are you just stating that it does?
The Scotty line.
Yes.
Scotty.
Is intended to be a bit of an Easter egg. To explain, although to my mind it seems perfectly reasonable. Like, why wouldn't you do that?
But yeah, like in the episode, it's like looped in with the rest of the ship, which is one reason why Scotty's explained to Uhura what the problem is, and she's like, "Oh, you can't do this because it means the whole ship will blow up because they're all linked together or whatever." Yeah.
So
it's like, why would you do that?
It seems perfectly reasonable, and not just this system. Then a number of other systems maybe should be isolated in some way. I think that would just be normal general engineering.
It's just a crazy idea.
Project management.
Like the torpedoes.
But I can't speak to that.
Kotonos.
Write in if you have experience in this area. But in future shows, they have commented before, often for plot reasons. For example, in Our Man Bashir, one reason they're able to pump them all into there is because the holodeck has its own whatever special systems.
Holodeck.
That handle shit differently than
right.
the rest
but
of the
But even if they give them their own dedicated server room and power source, they still manage to fuck with shit.
Yeah.
Even in the future. So.
But often it's then like isolated to the holodeck itself. But not always.
Chief O'Brien.
All right.
So, also number three. Apparently.
Blutar Nebula.
Apparently, Sir Arthur Conan Doyle is Spock's great ancestor.
Yes. Okay.
What's
the deal with that?
Is this
mentioned before?
Yes. This is another Easter egg.
What did
egg.
I miss?
This has caused some small amount
for the sake of the Blutar Nebula and space.
So, Blutarsky. Like, remember Blutarsky from... the National Lampoon's
fake.
You know, the school one, you know, the summer vacation. you know the one I'm talking about.
Nope.
Animal House.
Wait, I like this line.
Did you?
Oh, by the way, that's the moment I knew that it was Spock that did it, because when they were talking to Saint, mm-hmm. Maxwell Saint. And they were like, "Did you kill that guy?" And he's like, "No."
Did you?
It was funny and a good idea. I was like, that's funny, but I bet that plays into it.
And the second time I watched it, I was like, that's a good line.
And I was like, it's not Lon, I bet it's Spock.
That's
you know?
The good, but like the mystery kind of sucks, but the actual interactions I do really
totally.
Enjoy.
What?
Yeah.
Did you?
What?
Did you?
What?
No.
Nope.
You idiot!
Did you? Nope.
I know you're not.
You idiot!
What?
I know it's not on purpose, but you have slightly derailed me from this.
I didn't. Okay, I'm sorry.
Excellent point about the Arthur Conan Doyle.
Okay,
business.
Arthur Conan Doyle. Yes. Please, please, please go on.
So then I might.
A woman doesn't give up until she gets her man, and neither do I.
Since I. So that I might demonstrate my Star Trek bona fides.
Oh.
Well, but you love that house.
That's when I liked, when I was like, this is brilliant. I liked it before, but he was like, well, you love that house. Like that was brilliant. No. So this is another Easter egg of sorts that did cause a little bit of consternation out there.
Uh-oh.
In Star Trek VI, the Undiscovered Country, which we did cover long ago. I don't know.
Hell yeah.
It was like episode 20 or some shit like that.
Shit.
It was the first movie we covered.
Imagine in this hypothetical, like, I've already done that.
There's a line where Spock says, an ancestor of mine maintained that if you eliminate the impossible, whatever remains, however improbable, must be the truth. And with this line, this quote is a variation, it's a paraphrase of a line Sherlock Holmes says in The Sign of Four.
Right.
Now,
so we can like, and we will because we must.
Amanda Grayson?
Now, here's the deal. This is one of those things that I've always found peculiar because this is not the first time this is caused consternation. When people discuss this line in Star Trek VI, there's a debate as to whether Spock was being literal or if he was just sort of making a joke that he's logical like Sherlock Holmes, right? Now, that's part one of the debate. Is he literally saying he's related to somebody, or is it that he's just making a kind of a goofy joke reference?
Right. God damn it!
Now, for the camp that thinks he was being literal, now here's where we have a problem. Because when I think of that literally, I think he's saying that he's related to Arthur Conan Doyle. Because Arthur Conan Doyle wrote Sherlock Holmes. So yes, it's a... It's a Sherlock Holmes quote, but in a story written by Arthur Conan Doyle. So I think, and many people think, he means he's related to Arthur Conan Doyle. For some reason, a lot of people were saying, Spock's saying he's related to Sherlock Holmes, the character, which is crazy.
That's absurd.
Because Sherlock Holmes is not real.
No, okay. Spock is.
So you idiot!
That's a pre-existing thing that's existed and bubbles up from time to time on the internet.
You know, for such a smart detective, you're awfully stupid.
So in this episode, Spock just states outright, he declares that he is related to Arthur Conan Doyle. So in one sense, he's clearing up that debate. But now other people online was like, no, that line was never meant to be taken seriously. Or they're saying, no, he said he was related to Sherlock Holmes, which is stupid again, because Sherlock Holmes is not real.
Mm-hmm. All right. This is true.
Spucko.
So that's where that's coming from.
We can and we will because we must.
I like that line.
Yeah, that was a good line.
I didn't play it for any particular reason other than I like it.
Paul Wesley is fun. He's fun and he has a good time. It is a parody of a parody. Like I said, it's a parody of a parody of Kirk. He does a good job with it and he's clearly having a good time. The I'm known for my diction, that's a penis
diction,
right?
Yep. Dick.
And I am known for my diction.
So
diction.
It's both a joke about William Shatner, it's his cadence, not his diction. That's one problem.
Tango.
Like the problem is they want to make the dick joke, so they use the term diction when the line should be I'm known for my cadence, because Shatner is known for his cadence. I really wouldn't say he's known for his diction, which is it's a nuanced difference. It's a different thing. But they do go for diction to make that joke. It's the Shatner way he talks. And it's a dick joke.
Dick.
Yep. It's a dick joke.
Even though Kirk doesn't really bang that many women, as we've
not
discussed.
Too many.
Kirk is known as a bookworm and a nerd, and he falls in love periodically with powerful, intelligent women who are leaders of whole societies.
I was going to talk real quick about like the whole scene with the fireplace.
Jesse, do you approve?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
All right.
We can and we will because we must.
So it was goofy how Laan was able to find the quote-unquote burned film in the quote-unquote fireplace because the fireplace wasn't a real fireplace.
The implication being the murderer was so stupid that they thought they were disposing of the murder weapon by tossing it in a fire, but they didn't notice
that the fire was fake. The murderer was a spy.
Okay, because the mystery doesn't make any sense.
But this is strange because in-universe... Apparently there are no fires because that's dangerous for the holo program. So in universe, even if an NPC non-playable character throws something into a fire to be burned, it doesn't burn.
Interesting angle.
Why would that would contradict the behaviors? Because
I get what you're saying. The
character's behavior is saying, I'm going to throw this in the fire because it burns, but in universe it doesn't burn. So what should have happened, the behavior should have been, is that the character threw it in the fire to burn because that was the natural thing to do, and what happens, as soon as it hits the fake fireplace, the holo program should just make it disintegrate. Because it can do that because the film...
Or the character should go insane at the contradiction.
Yeah, that too.
And the NPC just starts like...
Would it be one of those...
You know, like the robot head starts going crazy.
Would it be kind of like that time when Picard wanted to genocide the entire Borg race by sending them...
Always got to bring up Iborg.
A virus that gave them an impossible logic problem and confused and sent them in an infinite loop.
Respectfully, it would be nothing like that.
Because like they'd be like, but it should, but it's not, but it should. And it would break just like the Borg. They would break just like the Borg would when they got the contradictory infinite recursion loop.
To be fair, I get what you're saying now. Maybe that would kind of work.
Yeah, but in any case, all it had to do was like the program should have been like, okay, the reason this character's throwing it in is because he's expecting it burned, so let's just, this is a holo film, so let's just disintegrate it. Yeah. So it was
a holo film.
So we have to assume that she solved it through a bug in the software, is the only thing we can assume, because it wasn't through any normal means. Like a properly written program would have taken that into account. The behaviors didn't match. A character wouldn't do something, wouldn't engage in a behavior that the universe doesn't support unless there was a bug in the software.
I know we've harped on this already. I think anytime you go into a mystery setting, whether it's meant to be a comedy, a parody, or whatever, it's always going to work better if the mystery itself works. It doesn't have to be a genius mystery. Right? You don't have to have the most groundbreaking shit. It just works better if it all kind of fits together. It's kind of that classic thing where the ideal mysteries are the ones where you can't guess the ending, but when you hear the ending retroactively, you're like, oh shit, I plausibly could have guessed.
Everything was all supposition, first of all.
There's not enough clues other than you did mention one or two clues that, it was Spock. But that doesn't even say anything. It was just like, oh, it was Spock. But what?
Yeah, so like one of the reasons it was like, okay, the chandelier fell when they were near her. That's how they found out that the safety protocols were off, is because she actually got a real cut. By the way, what would have happened?
And he got shot and didn't do anything.
What would have happened if she didn't like jump out of the way? She would have gotten really fucked up. Anyways,
he kind of pushed her out of the way.
Yeah, I guess you're right. Yeah. But like, but that was like a supposition on her part. She was like, oh, you cut the chandelier. That's evidence that, that's one bit of evidence that you're guilty, is because you're the one who pushed the chandelier. But there was no evidence to really say that other than the fact that they appeared to be the only two people in the room. Like I'm saying, like, it's plausible, and that's apparently what happened in the story, but that's not like, you can't present that in court and be like, we were in the same room and the chandelier fell down, it must have been Spock. Okay, well, she's saying Spock cut the chandelier, so he must have done it. Like, it wasn't
he stabbed Lee Woods.
Like, she was just making all these...
like a letter
opener. She was just making all these assumptions about what he did after she found out the truth. She was like, oh, the reason she found out the truth is because of the way he hugged. He didn't hug like Spock hugs.
Which I like that part. Yeah. I thought that was kind of a cool way to
But then she just kind of retroactively said, like, oh, all these things happened. It's like, you could have said any number of reasons why... You could have said, oh, well, there was someone hiding in the corner that cut the chandelier. Yeah. Any number of things could have caused any of the things that Spock apparently did. She only just sort of recited them, and we were supposed to be like, oh, yeah, if I watch it again, I'll notice that. But there was nothing to really notice, because it could have been anything, you know? I don't know.
It was a little bit discombobulated. Again, compared to Elementary, My Dear Data, that story was razor sharp, right? It only provided you the little bits of information that made sense, and the threats were coming from the interactions of the characters, and all the challenges made sense. It wasn't just some random weird nonsense.
Seems like Laan like went back and forth between a British and like American accent.
Yeah,
she was trying to play the character that was in the story.
Yeah, she was, but sometimes
who was American.
Yeah, but sometimes
she says American Lerving Rums.
But towards the end, she gets all frustrated and she's just herself.
Okay,
listen.
Yeah, right here.
everyone shut up.
Yeah,
now.
Exactly.
That's supposed to be her as Amelia, yeah. And that's not. Yeah. Yeah. So that's what I thought she was going for too. But
Amelia.
But then
Amelia's not American. Amelia's a British name.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. Oh, in fact, you can only be British if you have that name.
Only be British. Fucking There's no A-A-A. Other options. On this part, she was American.
Amelia Moon doesn't give up until she gets her man, and neither do I.
Yeah, that was fun.
You idiot!
But
San Diego.
Yeah, that was pretty crazy.
She's fun. She's fun. She's such a charming actor.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't, like Monster. I said, I wasn't like super enjoying the episode up until TK entered, and then I got into the episode, like I said, not, it wasn't like TK was the only thing I enjoyed. I started to enjoy the episode more as a whole as when that happened, because I kind of just like watching, like you said, Patrick, just watching the characters. The mystery itself wasn't anything great, but like I started to like, you know, get like enjoy just watching the characters interact and stuff like that.
Yeah,
you know?
Totally.
It was a good time.
Yeah, it was good. Good, but you're time. Right. No, it's no Elementary, My Dear Data. That's for certain. That's for certainly.
Now you wanted to chat. Dan, you mentioned earlier, because we didn't really get into it at the beginning, this recreation of the TOS
recreation room
opening intro song and all that other stuff. Mm-hmm. I really did enjoy what they did here, because the attention to detail was really good in the introduction, more so I think than in the actual show, The Last Frontier, because they even had like in TOS, they had that like one red star, right?
Yeah.
That one red star like coming towards the camera. They had that in there.
There was a blue one.
The music was really close to TOS. They would occasionally go, go down instead of up or something like that. But it was like, the sound effects and the music were exceptionally close.
Yeah. Far out,
I was very impressed with how they reproduced that teeny sound and everything.
Yeah, that was pretty. That was. I appreciate they went through all that work to make that. It was pretty cool.
The ship looked all silly.
The ship did look silly. There's one thing is that they didn't. It would be cool if they had a model. I get obviously
it's only a model.
They weren't going to do that. It was a little CGI, but
CGI.
But I don't know why. Fun. I enjoyed when Zip Knop in the outtake fell through the screen and like she's like wearing some jeans. I don't know why.
I enjoyed all the outtakes. I thought that was a great bit at the end, even though it was sort of, again, it's like the beginning in universe, sort of didn't make any sense, but it was fun.
And I liked Una's message that knowing when to ask for help is a strength, not a weakness, that needs to be stressed more.
Yeah, actually the whole giving Scotty both something to do to demonstrate his skills while having him learn a lesson about teamwork.
Well, at first,
that makes sense with his character at this stage in his career.
Yeah, at first when he was like, I've learned that you can't, like, sometimes it's best to do things on your own or whatever, or asking for help's not a great thing. At first I thought he was just making an excuse, because what I thought at first was that he was wanted to do it himself because he was trying to impress them. And when he said that, he was just making an excuse, trying to be like, oh, well, sometimes it's better to do it myself. But then I liked that at the end, it was actually because of some traumatic shit he went through. But then, like Una's message, like ask for help. You have to do that. So I thought that I kind of liked that whole part.
And it's an understandable perspective. I know the three of us can all we can relate to somebody who has a singular genius. You know,
yes.
And when you have a singular genius, and you're at work, and you know that you're the one who can do everything properly.
Yeah.
and so I understand Scotty's perspective, where he's like, man, if when I don't do it, people die. So I should just do everything and take it all, put all the pressure on me.
Things don't happen. Lisa.
You push it as hard as you can.
But you grow and you learn and you understand that sometimes you just got to let other people do stuff.
And the key to this puzzle is as clear as glass.
I like when Scotty was asking Uhura, he was like going to Uhura, he's like, you know what I mean by all these hypotheticals? And she goes,
I caught on almost immediately.
Like, I like that delivery. She's like, yes. She's like, condescending is too strong a word, but like, it's almost like,
so there was a hint of pity in there.
Yeah. You know, you're talking to a kid.
It's a
I caught on almost immediately.
It's a well performed line. It's also,
it's
just,
like she's a babysitter talking to, like, you know, or something.
It's also a well written line in that almost, it changes it from a good line. line to a fantastic line. not I figured out immediately. It was like, yeah. I figured out almost immediately.
Yeah, she wasn't.
It did take me like a minute or so.
Yeah, and she wasn't like, yeah, I caught on almost immediately. Like the way she says it is all like, what's it called when you're like kind of talking down to someone, not condescending?
Yeah,
patronizing.
Well,
patronizing a little bit, maybe.
A little bit.
A little bit. This has been this season has been a lot of Spock's sexy adventures, it seems.
I'm not a huge fan of the whole Spock.
Well, you guys love the Reese Darby. By the way, Reese Darby is awesome.
I was like, what are you?
Sorry, that was a.
Because I thought you were talking about restarring something. I was like, what are you talking about? Did I miss something?
Reese Darbydies.
Did I miss an episode?
No, Reese Darby.
Reese
Darby.
In the
wedding bells. Wedding bell blues.
Yeah. So you guys really like that episode, but that's all about Spock's sexy adventures.
Let me clarify.
Okay.
I'm cool with the Spock Chapel stuff because there is some hint of that in TOS, and there's a lot of fun stuff they can do, as well as in TAS, absolutely. There's some fun stuff they can do setting that up, and also we know from TOS, from What Women Want, or What Are Little Girls Made Of, whatever that episode was called. The one with Mel Gibson. You know the one with Mel Gibson, that episode of TOS?
Yeah, that one.
God damn it!
We know what ends up happening down the line to our pal, Dr. Sexy Irishman. What's his name?
Corby.
Corby.
Yes.
Roger Corby.
Wow.
So it is cool to see what's going on, see that business. As I've mentioned previously, going back to at least season two, I think I also like the idea. You get the impression that this is they're showing how Spock changed from the cage Spock, who's laughing at hilarious sound flowers, to TOS Spock, who's much more Vulcan style, leaning into the Vulcan logic and all that stuff, and that part of that potentially being this experience he has with Chapel, informing that shift. I like that. But now they're introducing, now Spock's also having...
It seems a little...
I love our show, but...
With his other person.
It seems a little weird and extra.
And it complicates, that turns the love triangle into a love square. It is helped because they do have good chemistry. I will say that...
Sure.
The scenes themselves, out of the context of the show, they kind of work. I believe that they would... be together. I believe it.
They're both like sort of cold, and you can. And this is all about like,
but with hidden passions,
seeing their softer side.
Yeah,
violence and relaxation seem to be popular.
I buy all that. I do buy all that. It's just sort of like, again, Frasier. It's a hat on a hat.
Yeah, it's a stovepipe hat.
It's a Carmen Sandiego hat on like you know, one of the hats that Samuel L. Jackson wears.
Right, Kangol hat.
I think I followed that.
All right.
Speaking of a little too little extra, well, maybe not too extra.
A little too raff.
Maybe it depends.
Get it? That's a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2 joke.
Yes,
Secret of the Ooze.
I know. All right. In the situations, I don't know the best course of action is to ignore you or acknowledge you, because if I ignore you, you'll explain it. If I acknowledge you, we're off on a tangent. So,
I don't want to go on a tangent.
I don't know what the best move is, honestly.
I didn't want my comment to sound like a non sequitur. So
we're all children.
Wanted to provide a little footnote there.
Thanks.
But anyway, please continue.
That's really nice of you. I appreciate that. Okay. I thought this was a little extra. I don't know. It was kind of silly. But maybe you guys thought differently. Maybe you guys thought it was artistic. I don't know. When La'an and Spock were dancing at the end, and then La'an goes, "I know you. I know the feel of your arms when we dance. I know the way we look into each other's eyes. He didn't look at me like that, or perhaps I've misread the situation." And then it led into a weird hip thrust shot. You remember that hip thrust shot? It was you could have missed it.
They were doing a tango.
I know they were doing a tango, but it was funny. They did this perfect shot of her butt and her legs surrounding his groin, and it was supposed to be. It was very obvious what they were doing.
Was it a little male gazy? Yeah. Was it both gazing?
This thing is
was it just sexy? Sexy all around.
There was definitely like her butt was definitely prominent in the shot, so it was definitely. I know I'm walking a line here, but saying
it means this from a purely sort of cinematic critique.
Yeah, like it was male gazy in that sense, but I will say that it included like it wasn't just about that. It was about It was about
structure.
Well,
okay.
Trying to guess what I'm saying. That's right. Cool. Right. I appreciate that you're into it. I appreciate
enthusiasm.
I am into it.
He has enthusiasm.
But I like the. To their credit, it was more a whole shot of her hips and legs surrounding his hips and legs. So it's probably more meant to be like them together in a sexy hip thrust position. It was probably more supposed to indicate them like being together than anything else. But they also, there was a prominent shot of like that aspect of her body, which is fine. I just thought it was just kind of like jarring when that scene happened. I was like, whoa, where did that fucking come from? Yeah. Anyway.
Do you think it's logical to get an erection in that context?
For her? After, for
with the kiss.
For Lon?
No, not you. Okay, never mind.
Tango. Tango.
Bonfire. I got all this. Got all this.
Tango.
Bonfire.
Tango. 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 Tango.
Every 7 years, every 7 minutes, bonfire. Come on.
Check out that vocal fry.
Tango.
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 So I don't know. I'm split on this because, like I said, the actual interactions, I think that there's chemistry there.
Mm-hmm.
From a story perspective, I'm kind of just like, I don't know. We'll see where they go with this.
Yeah,
we'll find out.
We'll see. We'll see what happens with all that.
A couple other odds and ends and bits and bobs.
Let's play some TK sounds.
I know. He's actually doing me a favor.
So he's a communist.
Does no one here care about my vision?
Do you have any idea how humiliating that is?
They were replacing me
on my own show. I love our show, but you love that house.
But I didn't kill anyone. Movies.
Movies?
You can't do that. That's true.
A line worth delivering. Oh. I could try to.
Yeah.
I enjoyed that.
That was when his hands were clasped on his stomach.
Yeah. Jess Bush's character was named Adelaide Shaw, which is a joke on her being from Australia.
Right. I'm good at what I do.
Or maybe a reference, not a joke, I suppose.
He's
a chauvinistic egomaniac.
Of course, Jez Bush is herself.
We need it.
From Australia and was using a variation of something close to her original accent.
We can't give them our brain cells.
For this, for that character, or for the other character.
Absolutely 100% never.
Never.
I'm good at what I do. Yeah, yeah.
They didn't have her say
it is true.
They did not have her say no. I'm always excited to hear an Australian person say no.
But there were some no's in this episode, like this one.
No.
There was also this one.
No.
That was a close one.
That was great. That was
no.
We didn't get enough in Bango.
No, we didn't.
Him leaning back, thinking, and just being like, no.
Yeah. There wasn't enough in Bango. There was.
Thanks for coming so fast.
No.
He tells no lies.
What would you know?
Yeah.
Thanks for coming so fast.
No.
Not enough Benga, not enough Ortegas.
Oh, yeah.
But obviously things get limited
so
many characters involved.
I had just as many Ortegas as in Benga in this episode.
I didn't know this was a pajama party. I do like a good challenge.
Oh, and this one was a joke. This one was a joke.
You know I'm an actor, not a doctor, right?
That was a joke. Yeah. Bones McCoy.
That was a good
Bones so. McCoy. Does anyone ever call him Bones McCoy?
Yeah. I think you do.
Yeah.
Cool. You know I'm an actor, not a doctor, right?
That was a Bones McCoy joke.
It was.
Do you think he'll be on the show at some point?
What'd you say, Jeff?
Do you think he'll be on the show at some point?
Of course.
McCoy?
By the fifth season, which, by the way, we now know that Strange New Worlds renewed through season 5, but season 5 is only going to be 6 episodes.
Right.
But definitely McCoy will show up. One thing I did want to mention before we close things out, from a production standpoint, that I did think was really cool.
You sabotaged the chandelier.
Was when the bridge is lit up with the neutron star, there's a brief moment where it's like super brightly lit up, and the way they lit the set, it really made it look like TOS style. Like it was like super gray walls and stuff. Like it was much brighter than we usually see it. Check it out.
Check it out.
Check it out.
Like and subscribe.
Maybe I'll put it on the website or something, but I don't know. I thought that was a fun, again, sort of like an Easter egg showing, yeah, it's this modern interpretation of the bridge, but when it really comes down to it, it's still very, very TOS-y, with a lot of bells and whistles. Any last points from either of you two gents?
One point Spock was like commenting. Spock was commenting on... Hollow Spock was commenting on like the behavior of the people in thing, and he was like, they work together and let their drama basically fuck them up, fuck up their work.
Their emotions.
They fuck up their work. They're so stupid. And then Lon, you saw her give a look like, oh no, that's me with Spock, right? But like, didn't he do that with Chapel? I mean, I guess it's a little different because he probably works more closely with Lon than he does with Chapel, but it is still, they all still work together.
He was causing problems with, part of the issue with Spock is he was being a little... for lack of a better term, childish with the Chapel. All his emotions, totally understandable, but his, I guess, lack of experience dealing with that type of relationship he reacted poorly.
Also, the neutron, the neutron star is doing all this fucked up shit, and because of that, Una says that Ortegas is reinstated because of it, and Benga's like, are you sure that's a good idea? But that never really goes anywhere. It's just like them just stating, like, okay, she's in the episode
just
now.
Letting us know that's why she's back.
Yes, yeah,
just
letting us
her
know.
Her punishment is concluded.
Is done.
From her prior malfeasance.
I mean, at least they're telling us instead of just introducing like, warp drive wears out the space-time continuum and then never talk about it again. Yeah. It's like, at least they're mentioning it, but it's like...
It's kind of, this is like, they did this on Deep Space Nine a lot, where it'd be like, oh, so-and-so's like back from the, you know, that's why things are like a little weird this episode because so-and-so went to a conference or something or whatever. Mm-hmm. Now they're back. Fun episode, you know, a little rough around the edges, a couple issues there, but
I saw a side of Anson Mount that I never thought of. That was
Anson Mount is really brilliant, and that was no surprise. We knew that going into this, but we really did get to see some fun stuff.
I mean, I mean, maybe you know his work better than I do, but I was surprised at how believable he was.
He's a very good actor. He's played many varied and different roles, but it just impresses me that he keeps producing new roles. I mean, even his Pike is a really interesting take on, yes, he's a suave guy, but his version of masculinity and confidence and lack of confidence and insecurities and stuff, the combination he's chosen for this character
But I didn't kill anyone.
So what are we talking about next week?
They were replacing me.
Next week we're talking about what is it?
Through the looking glass, the inner light time looking glass.
The lens of something time.
Nope.
We'll talk about that
did you?
Next week.
Did you?
I'm sorry. When he says
did you?
That's what happens when they go like, is it you? And they point at the character and they go, is it you? And then they point at the screen and go, and they go,
did you?
Breaking that fourth wall. Sorry, okay, that's it.
Like a 1960s one. Okay, sorry. Yes, next week, Through a Lens of Time.
I'd like to see you try.
Something along those lines. We'll be talking about that. If you'd like to write us, feedback at itsgotstartrek.com. Go to itsgotstartrek.com just to check out whatever, you know.
I'm on it.
Stuff to do there. Check out old episodes, that sort of thing. And on social media, at itsgotstartrek. Find us at all the cool places.
I do like a good challenge.
Blue Sky in particular. We are on Apple Podcasts, YouTube,
words that have been used to describe me.
Sign up and subscribe, all those places, especially YouTube. That really can help us out.
What?
Even though there's no actual video, but people like podcasts on YouTube. So anyway, we'll talk more Star Trek and more Strange New Worlds next week. Bye bye.
Computer end program.
Warner's has the rights to a book I've been chasing. They're even gonna let me direct. I love our show, but movies. That's how you change hearts and minds, kids.